Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
All right, partner. Keep on rolling, baby. You know what time it is.
This is not Greg DeMarco. I am doing a complete takeover. This is Big Rig from the used-to-be 2MB Wrestling Podcast. And I'm just taking over this bitch. And I'm going to take it over with somebody that you might be familiar with. So let me get this guy's entrance music queued up here. Welcome to the show, Patrick O'Dowd.
Oh, it's good to be here, and it's good to be on this show and knowing that we got two individuals on the correct side of the country in the right time zone, in the right place, be able to get this running with the way the rest of the world works.
How nice is it? And I am playing Glory in the background as we're talking.
Very lightly. Yeah, you are.
And it is just so nice not to have to worry about them West Coast scumbags. I can do it at 7 o'clock my time. Well, motherfucker, that's 11 o'clock my time. I got shit to do tomorrow.
We got jobs, man.
I'm telling
jobs.
You. It must be nice to still be working when Raw comes on Monday nights. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
Man.
Yeah, like right now, I'm like happy. Like, it's weird because, like, I'm going to miss SmackDown because SmackDown's running right now. But, like, knowing that I don't have to wait through SmackDown and then another hour and then being like, man, we got lives. To start early the next day.
We do. And thank you, Miss Laura, for... Hold on, here we go. All right. I didn't think she was that hot. The chick can sing that song, but she's pretty hot.
I mean, for the 80s, you know, pretty solid. She's not with us anymore though, so.
I feel like Michael from The Office trying to hit on the Jer girl. The Jer girl done passed away.
Yeah, she passed away like last year.
Oh, man.
Or something like that. It was one of those things when they the family gave their blessing to the Blues using it as their song, which we're gonna talk about wrestling for the better part of this hour anyway. But I gotta get this off my chest. Of all the sports moments, and I've seen all of my teams that I follow win a major championship now, because I'm a Bears fan. Saw that in '85. It's been a long time, but I saw that in '85, and
wait,
I remember it.
You were alive to see that in '85?
I was. I was in second grade. I watched that.
You were
with my
old,
folks.
Man.
I am old. I am old. I'm okay with it. I'm a Bulls fan. I was in junior high and high school when Jordan was at the height of his power,
nice.
Winning six championships. I'm a St. Louis Cardinal fan, and like all those victories, you know, all those championships were great. But I've been a Blues fan since I was a teenager, like 13, 14 years old. and have always followed this team and watched them make the playoffs and then just get bounced in like the worst ways imaginable. I watched them lose the Red Wings, the Blackhawks, you name them, we lost them. And this championship, I could say without hyperbole, was the most emotional I've ever gotten over a sporting event.
You did cry.
What?
Right?
I did cry. I totally cried.
I'm not making funny because when my Saints won the Super Bowl, I was crying. So
like I still can't watch highlights of the game. Like I've rewatched the game like three times, and every time that Vladimir Tarasenko hits up Braden Schenn for the third goal of the game. Like I still like that's when it hits me. And then like I watched the parade on Saturday, and the players that like everybody was drunk. Oh yeah. Everybody like they were off in their trucks.
What happened with your city, man? They left that the streets. Your city looked like a shithole.
Yeah, well, it did. They took over.
Hey, that's New Orleans on a good day. So
but here's it was good for the city.
Absolutely.
The parade's going on. Without question. They had about 500,000 people there, give or take.
Nice.
The players were hopping off the trucks. They were running up to the fans. They were drinking with the fans. They had the cup with them. Alex Petrangelo had the cup and was just going up to families and letting them put their babies in the cup and take pictures of the baby in the Stanley Cup.
Did anyone chug beer out of it like Dave's?
Oh, they did that too.
Oh, nice.
And the weekend that, I mean, they started partying from the second their plane got back from Boston. And I don't think they've stopped yet. Like, I don't know where they are now, but because they're in Vegas. That's where the team had to then go to Vegas because the NHL awards are going. So they basically drunkenly flew back from Boston, were drunk in St. Louis for 3 days, and an hour in Vegas. Partying for like a week.
Hey, they deserve it, man. Any team that wins a championship in their respective sport, go out. Yes. And
50 years of waiting.
Did now in hockey, you have to return the cup after a certain amount of time, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Okay. So they have it for, I think it's for a year. Every player gets gets time with the cup on their own. That started in the 90s, I guess. And that's when you start seeing the weird Twitter photos. You're going to see like the crazy shit that people do when they have their day with the cup, and you know, everything from people drinking out of it to I've heard very unsavory things happening to it.
I like it. Shit.
That is such good shit. It. So happy weekend, and couldn't feel better about sticking it to a fan base as angry as Boston, because fuck those guys.
Yeah, Boston, man. Your khakis, and I'm not talking about your khakis. I'm talking about your khakis, your pants, your khakis.
That's right.
So the number we need to focus on, Patrick, for the show is 429.
429, okay.
That's your Twitter followers.
Oh, dear.
So we're going to keep that tradition going. But before we do anything...
Hashtag Patrick500.
Hashtag Patrick500. But before we get started... I need to plug some things. The chairshot.com, as you heard in the opening of the show, that was Velvet Pipes himself, Christopher Platt. All your opinion pieces, news, analysis, podcasts, you name it, thechairshot.com has it. You can follow The Chairshot on Twitter at thechairshot.com. That is thechairshot.com, no dot in between. And then once you do that, you need to do two more things, Patrick. You need to go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and pick you up. How does he say it? An official, like a referee's whistle t-shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees, and then go to paypal.com/RickyFourSaints and give your boy some money. I got a house coming up. I need to pay some bills off. but 429 is what we're going to stick with, and I hope. Look, do you have the app that you know who's following you and you're not following them and vice versa?
Oh, no. You should be happy that I have 429 followers and know how to tweet in the first place.
You need to get this app because you can delete people who you are following, but they're not following you back. So it makes it kind of weighs out your following to followers, makes you look a little bit more important.
Gotcha.
Because you tweet some good shit, man.
Oh, thank you.
So we need to get that 429 to 1429 by the end of the show.
Oh.
So...
Hashtag life goals.
I wish that was my life goals. Life would be a lot less stressful. But, yeah, man, so I listen to you guys' show every week. Miranda is not going to make it on the show. She decided to bail. Again, we're doing this earlier than usual, so the West Coast people are probably still working. And we're not working on their time this week. We're working on our time, East Coast.
Yeah.
And it's going to be nice to be in bed for 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. And at least from your sake, because you were telling me sometimes you're up till 1, 2 in the morning waiting for these clowns.
Yeah, you know, and then every once in a while, just saying, we get a little chatty. And you just don't know where the conversation's going to go. And the next thing you know, I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, yo.
Yeah, I get up.
I get up at 6. I get up at 6. And then, of course, if I bring that up, see, if you've listened to the show, you know this. If I bring this up, and usually I don't bring it up on the show, I'll, text Greg, be like, dude, let's get going. And pull the curtain back. And then Greg will just make fun of me on the show about it. Be like, well, now we got to go because Patrick's got to go to bed.
The best part about it is when Greg mentions it. You know, Patrick O'Dowd has to leave, and let's say goodbye to Poe. We've already lost Patrick. Patrick has hung up already.
Oh, yeah, I hang the fuck up.
But let's plug your Twitter, right? All right. There we go. I got to pull you up. I had the damn Patrick show up. All right, so if you want to follow Patrick O'Dowd on Twitter, it's at Wrestling Realist. That's at Wrestling Realist, at WRESTLNGREALIST. So that's Wrestling Without an I. Is that correct?
That is correct. And congratulations on getting that all out there on the first try. I know you had to take your time. I screw it up every time.
Yes.
That is why I do not plug my own Twitter handle.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why don't you change it?
Because I like it.
Okay. Then that's all I need to know. I change my Twitter handle once a month, and Greg's like, "You changed it again?" I said, "Yeah."
Yeah, no, it's the Greg. We came up with that moniker a while ago, back when the show first started, because I'm pretty matter of fact with the way I judge wrestling and the way that I look at it, and it really came about because I'm really good at kind of pouring a cold bucket of water over people when they get excited over stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You get really hopeful about, oh, I don't know. Asuka being queen of everything and is going to run roughshod over the WWE. And if you follow the WWE, you just know that's not how they book people. It's not how they book wrestlers. And so a lot of times I'll be the one who will be Asuka's going to lose here and do this. And that's just the way it goes. And people will be mad, but it's kind of realistic as to how business works.
Right.
I also don't look at every loss or defeat as this death knell in a wrestler's career. People care way too much about wins and losses in the WWE now, in particular. And it's just not what that company does. It's not who they are.
Not anymore.
And that's what I find really interesting when you look at, the subset, because I think that the people that we see on Twitter are really a subset of fans, and they're the ones that that don't look for the right things out of the company that is the biggest company in the world.
The best part about this is we can watch. I'm watching. So what you're listening to now is was it Drake Maverick? Who is it?
Yeah, Drake Maverick. Yeah.
So he's the new 24/7 champion. R-Truth was getting in his vehicle, and he came and schoolboyed him as he was getting in the driver's seat, took his title, and got off in his rental car and started hauling ass with the title. So
nice. About time.
Yeah, so let's just – I know you have a list of things you want to talk about, but this in particular is 50-50 on Twitter. I think, to me, and some people are going to say you're one-sided. Some people are one-sided. If you're AEW – apologist with one event. I don't know how that could be possible, but no matter what WWE does, it's always wrong. AEW is always right. Anything WWE puts out is shit. It's always going to be shit. And I think the perfect example of what I'm trying to say with this is the 24/7. Yes, it's an ugly title. I get it. First off, I hate when people make the comparison to the hardcore title. it's not the same. It's not a hardcore championship. Yeah. It's not. It is a 24/7 championship that is on the line 24/7. And just with that stipulation, Patrick, you open up a shit ton of things you can do with this from an entertainment standpoint. One of which is what I just explained. R-Truth pinning Jinder Mahal in the plane while he was sleeping. Dude, I just wish people would say, all right, let me watch this with an open mind, because this is some of the best stuff WWE has given us in a very long time. What are your thoughts on the 24/7? What are your thoughts on what they're doing with it? And what are your thoughts on people that no matter what they do, it's never going to be, it's always going to be shit?
I'll take the last question first. Those people that always think that it's shit, I don't understand why they watch the show. Like, I just don't get it. Like, if you have decided that this is crap and will always be crap, don't watch the crap. And I no longer buy the excuse of there's no other way to watch other wrestling. Especially when you look at the accessibility with the advent of the internet, with the fact that there are now going to be upwards of 4 legitimate wrestling programs on major cable television and streaming. Like, it's just nuts. And if you're going to watch something just to hate watch it, you're not really doing yourself any good. And are you really a fan of wrestling?
Right.
Now, the 24/7 title, I love the 24/7 title. I love the concept. I think it's a lot of fun. I think that one of the pieces that I always have to remind myself is that when I became a wrestling fan, and what really brought me into professional wrestling wasn't 5-star matches between Flair and Steamboat in the WCW in 1989. Now, I watched those and I fell in love with those as I got older. But when I was a kid, it was Hulk Hogan.
Right.
It was the Ultimate Warrior.
And no matter, and it's funny, and I hate to interrupt you because you make good points, but I was thinking about that today. For some, I drive all day at work. So all day I'm listening to wrestling podcasts from everybody's podcast. So I get everyone's point of view and then I form my own. But we were talking about that exact thing that Conrad was saying. And I'm going back in the archives. I'm on episode 2021, re-listening to all of his and Bruce's stuff. And they were talking about how Flair and Perfect and Shawn are just so good in the ring. But they were talking about as a kid, to me, it was the Ultimate Warrior. It was Hogan. I wasn't looking at in-ring technicians when I was a child. I was looking at colorful. I was looking at larger-than-life characters. So when you said that, it's, yes, now, looking back now, Shawn, Flair, Perfect, those were in-ring technician specialists. But what got my attention as a kid was the colorfulness of the Ultimate Warrior with these cocaine addict promos that he was cutting in the back.
Yeah, my first professional wrestling like memory that I bought into as a kid was in the build to WrestleMania 4 to the tournament.
How old were you?
Oh gosh, I was in grade school, but it was Hogan and Andre on the main event on NBC. And it was the infamous crooked Earl Hebner double.
Twin referees.
The twin referee.
Evil twin referee, I apologize.
Yep. And, you know, Hogan gets pinned, fast count, kicks out. And then I will never forget when the other Hebner, when both Hebners are there, and he's like, he's doing the double take between the two. And you're just like, what's going on? As a kid, that was what I bought into.
Yep.
That was the sort of stuff. People make fun of Papa Shango. I bought into that shit.
Yep.
Like when he was feuding with the Ultimate Warrior and the black goo was coming down the Warrior's head, I was like, what's going on? And
that shit scared me though, man. I'm looking behind my back when my mom cut the light out. I'm looking for Papa Shango.
Right. And people like to act like those elements didn't exist in other wrestling companies. I hate to break it to you. I'm watching right now, my watch on the network is I'm watching all the old Mid-Atlantic Crockett promotion stuff.
Interesting.
From like 1981, 82. You wonder who one of the most over guys is? It's Handsome Jimmy Valiant. You know what his gimmick was? He was the Boogie Woogie Man. Come out to these weird goofy-ass 50s sound and music, doing crazy gyrations and dances. And that guy is not a serious, like, he's not a serious worker. He's not blowing you away. Ric Flair's there. Steamboat's there. Jake Roberts, a really young Jake Roberts and a young Barry Windham are there. But the guys that are really over and that you're paying attention to outside of the Anderson brothers, Gene and Ole, not Ole and Arn, it's people like the Boogie Woogie Man. It's Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant Slaughter is one of the biggest bad guys in 81, 82 for the Crockett's. And then a guy named Roddy Piper who just shouts and promos like crazy. And you want to see some good stuff of Piper. You know, people talk about Piper's Pit. He always had that gift, and his real talent that they used him for in the Crockett's was commentary. He doesn't wrestle much. He'd just be there sitting next to David Crockett, and he'd be doing the color commentary work as either the United States heavyweight champion or whatever sort of local belt they had at the time. That's what he did. But it was the entertainment guys. These guys weren't working. And Piper, you know, like people love Piper. Piper's not a great worker. He wasn't giving you work rate matches.
Yep.
So when I look at something like now, you look at something like the 24/7 title, and you look at what I would argue is some of the most entertaining stuff R-Truth's ever done in his career, and which is saying a lot because he's been really entertaining since he kind of went crazy with the whole I'm scared of snakes thing and all those things a few years back. Him and that pairing with Carmella and the characters that, you know, the involvement they've been able to get with some guys on the roster that just aren't going to get TV time any other way.
And that was my argument when they did it. It's you bitch and complain because person A, B, C, D, and E never get television time. So they create this title to give person A, B, C, D, and E television time, and you still bitch and complain about it. How about you just sit back? Dude, cameras under the ring. People dressing up in wigs, it's entertainment television. I love it. I'm a fan of it. I'm enjoying it. And I just don't know why people have to shit on everything WWE does. I think
part of it is that it's perceived to be a cool thing to do. It's perceived to be the right thing to do. I think that there's so much cynicism no matter. Like, I looked at this Raw. Did you watch Raw last night?
Some of it.
Okay. I thought Raw last night was about as good an episode of Raw as you'll see in a long time. From Seth Rollins beating the hell out of everybody with a chair.
Saw that. That was good.
To a main event that's as good as anything that AEW puts out. In terms of you had Daniel Bryan, you had Seth Rollins, and they went at it for 16 minutes. Just a hell of a match. Really good stuff. Everything you would have wanted out of an AEW show. And yet there's still these people that think that show was shit. And I don't understand that person. I don't understand what they saw that I didn't see.
And I think people, I don't want to say scared, Patrick, but I think if you don't agree with the majority of wrestling Twitter, they feel they're going to be outed. And they're going to get ganked. You know what? And I tell people on Twitter, like what you like, don't like what you don't like. I have opinions all the time on Twitter that people disagree with, and I get it. You would think I just murdered somebody.
Yeah.
And I get blocked more because people don't agree with my opinions. And apparently if you don't agree with someone's opinion, you don't have a conversation about it, which is why I'm on Twitter. You just block people.
Right. And if we have time, depending on how the show goes, part of what has been a big discussion with Greg Miranda and myself leading up to the show is that mentality. This interesting thing where, like, an opinion from X, Y, and Z is considered gospel. You disagree with that opinion. What the hell's wrong with you? You're an idiot. You don't know anything. Blocked.
Yep, and I really don't want to start on Dave, because I just, are you there, Patrick? I think Patrick dropped. All right, we're back. I don't know what happened, but we got him back. But yeah, dude, Dave Meltzer, I never understood how somebody could pay somebody else to hear their opinion. To me, that's the dumbest thing. I'm going to spend my hard-earned money to hear your opinion and then take your opinion as the gospel. And everyone else is wrong no matter what they say. You're right. I don't know, dude. That is the most ignorant concept I've ever heard in my life. Ever.
There is a terrific shoot interview that Greg shared with me yesterday of Al Snow talking about the evolution of Dave Meltzer and how his opinion has somehow morphed into the most credible source of information around pro wrestling. And it's about a 5-minute clip that I really feel like people should listen to. I may rip off Greg and steal the link and post it on my Twitter, see if I can get that extra, you know, get over the 429 hump by sharing footage of things that you should watch. Because it's really insightful. And Al Snow wasn't having anything of it when this guy was trying to be like, well, Dave Meltzer could have an opinion. And Al Snow's like, absolutely right. But people look at Dave Meltzer as this expert, as somebody who's been in the ring and done all this stuff, and he's never done any of that stuff.
Right.
And a lot of what he's doing is forming his subjective opinion on how something is, and it's impacting the business.
Yep.
And it's impacting wrestlers and the way that they look at themselves in the business. And he's like, that's a problem. That's the wrong guy to be basing everything off of.
Yeah, I don't want to get on Dave.
Right.
Man.
Oh, Dave makes me sad. We love to pick on Dave here on the DeMarco show.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but I guess it's more of that no matter what anyone, he's God. What he says goes. If he gives it a 4-star match, that's what it was. If he gives it a 1-star match, right, it was shit. It's like, no, because there are a lot of 5-star matches I don't think are 5-star, and there are a lot of 1-, 2-, and 3-star matches that I thought were 4- and 5-star match. It's like you said, it's a subjective opinion. So when I go to tweet now, I've learned over the last couple months, you have to deal with Twitter very softly because you're dealing with a very frail audience. So I always put on my post when I do a poll, out of these opinions, because if I don't put every opinion in a four maximum, you know, when you go to do a poll on Twitter, you only have 4 choices. If I don't put every single one on 4, it's like I murdered somebody. Oh, how do you not have this? It's like out of these opinions. And when I go and post my opinion, this is my opinion. It is a subjective opinion, all in caps.
Right, right.
Then I'll post my opinion. But let's not go off on that, man. I know the event of the year is coming up this Sunday.
Right.
Skechers presents Stomping Grounds. Skechers. I think that's correct.
I love it. You are correct. I just think it's hilarious that Skechers is presenting Stomping Grounds. I mean, how perfect is that?
I know there are some things you want to talk about, man. I don't know what order you want to go in, Patrick. So
what we usually do here on the show, I think when we do pay-per-view, week of pay-per-view, we always go through the card as it is. And so what I'll do right now is I'm going to hit refresh because I don't know if anything's happened on – oh, yep, we had to change the card. So that's why we do this. But we go through the card, and basically what we do is we go match by match.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively brief, but we say who should win and then who will win.
Right.
And we kind of go through the matches and we take turns. So each of us will alternate our who goes first. And then I'm going to assume that from what I understand, the Miranda show is happening tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that Greg and Miranda will do this for their predictions, because this is how I do my predictions for the show and for the website when Greg sends them to anybody else, if he still does anymore. And so I think we'll run through the card. We'll just start. I'm going to start at the bottom with the WWE.
Well, before we get started, I want to plug my Twitter because I'm going to get some hate tweets from this. It's at, I just changed again, so let me verify. It's at The Big Rick 62. The Big Rick 62 on Twitter. I just hit 5,000 followers last week. And it's all due to the app, man. You got to get rid of people that aren't following you, Patrick.
All right. I'll have to take a look at this.
Okay. Because some of these, I'm just going to be honest. I keep up with wrestling on Twitter because I get up at 3 in the morning.
Right.
And I work 12-hour shifts, so I come home by the time I do dinner, get the house together because I know my wife's going to be tired. It's 7 o'clock. Yep. I'm ready to go back to bed. I don't have 9 hours a week to watch wrestling, so what I keep up on Twitter and in the chat group is what I keep up with. So that being said, sir, take us to the Stomping Grounds card.
Alrighty, so we're going to start. We're going to start right at the very bottom, and just I'm assuming a match that was announced during SmackDown. We have a SmackDown Tag Team Championship match. Actually, it doesn't say that it's for the title, so I want to be very careful with that. So SmackDown Tag Team Champions Daniel Bryan and Rowan versus Heavy Machinery. And Rick, so why don't you tell us who should win and who will win?
This is where I'm going to get some hate tweets. Uh-oh. I have no idea who Otis and Tucker are. Because if it does not trend on my Twitter feed and we do not talk about them, I like to consider myself the Hulu version of wrestling. You present me 3 hours, I will absorb an hour and a half. And if it's not in the other hour and a half, I'm sorry. So I'm just going to go Daniel Bryan and Rowan should and will.
Right, I agree with you. I will also say that I'm not as familiar with Heavy Machinery as probably some of the other folks amongst the chair shot are. I do know that just looking at them, right, they apparently lost their necks somewhere. They look like a pair of bowling balls that run
without
through an
question.
Open field. Without question. You know, from what I've seen of them, they look like a lot of fun. I just don't think it's Daniel Bryan and Rowan's time yet. I really think that my big hope, you know, we were talking about shirts earlier. Someday I'm going to pay for the hashtag Save Tag Team Wrestling because that's my favorite. One of my favorite parts of wrestling is tag team wrestling. And seeing Daniel Bryan and Rowan kind of be that angle right now, I think that there's still a lot of legs with those two. I think that Daniel Bryan as a heel is so much better with a belt. So he should win, and he will win.
Now, I did click on Otis's name here on Wikipedia. That's the guy that right. does that that Caesar, like he's having a seizure.
Yep.
Dance in the ring. Okay, got you.
Yeah.
Daniel Bryan and Rowan.
Daniel Bryan. So next up on the card that they've got listed here on WWE.com is Big E and Xavier Woods versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I'm going to go ahead and take a look on this one. I see no reason why Big E and Xavier Woods should win this. I think that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn should win, and I think they do win. I think that those two always make magic when they're buddies together. They're buddies as heels, and I think that they're going to take care of business against Big E and Xavier Woods.
When is Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? When is Kevin Owens? When does Kevin Owens not create magic when he's with somebody?
I don't know, but I mean, these two, their history,
yes,
you know, all the way back to the Indies, can't
Correct.
Deny it.
Yeah, and the next question is, for the love of everything that is turning heel, when is Big E going to screw somebody? I wanted Big E to just clothesline the shit out of Kofi at WrestleMania when he won, because right. I'm an asshole, apparently. Fuck your moment, Kofi. I'm want to watch a show for entertainment. Hey, did Tony Soprano say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't kill this guy because he's having it? No, fuck. Tony shot him in the fucking head. It's entertainment. It's a television show. But what to go back to the who should win and who will win, I'm with you. Let the New Day just keep going with that. But Kevin and Sammy, great storylines, man. Great chemistry. And like you said, these two make magic every time they're together. We know it's going to split up at some point, but let's start building the anticipation with these two and keep them going.
All right. So up next on the card, United States champion Samoa Joe versus Ricochet. Ricochet winning his shot at the United States championship this past week on Raw in a 5-man elimination match.
Did Samoa Joe just get a haircut?
Yeah, I think he did.
Jesus Christ. For that reason alone, and the fact that Dave said Ricochet has a good chance, I'm going to go with Ricochet. And I'm going to say should and will, because the fact that I'm not hearing anything or seeing anything or hearing anybody talking about Samoa Joe as United States champion, but everyone's talking about Ricochet, I think it's time to just Let's move on from Samoa Joe. And again, that's not a knock on him. But let's give it to Ricochet. He's the guy everybody's talking about. Let's see what he can do with it. And let's just go. Ricochet will and should.
Right. So I'm going to go a little different from you here on this one, as I do think Samoa Joe should win this match. And for a lot of the reason that you said, I guess, and this is more of a personal bias thing. In the land of wrestlers that I wish and just had been bigger than what they've been in the WWE, Samoa Joe is really high on that list for me. And it just has never felt like Samoa Joe has gotten traction. Even when he's won big, whether it's beating Rey Mysterio, unfortunately, he gave that win right back,
which was total bullshit, by the way.
Right, I 100% agree. It feels like if you're going to do anything with Samoa Joe and make him a real force, this is kind of the last chance to do so. But I do think that unfortunately, the WWE doesn't see Joe as a big player the way that I see Joe as a big player, and I do think that this is when Ricochet wins the United States Championship. I think that he has some serious momentum, and that they're looking to build him up and put a belt on him, and he really does excite people. As a wrestler, like when you watch him work, you can't deny how thrilling he is for the fans. And so, sadly, while I want Joe to win, I think Ricochet is going to become the new United States champion this Sunday.
Yes.
Yes.
I agree.
Right.
Shout out to Big Dave, Attitude of Aggression podcast.
Yeah. All right, Big Dave. Up next is everyone's favorite wrestler in the internet wrestling community, Roman Reigns. taking on Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre should win this match. Drew McIntyre deserves to win this match. Drew McIntyre has done everything that's been asked of him since he's returned to the WWE as a heel to get himself over as a big deal, and the fans have bought in. And he should absolutely get the feather in his cap to defeat Roman Reigns. Unfortunately, he's going to lose to Roman Reigns this coming Sunday at Stomping Grounds. I have a special moniker that I give Charlotte called LOL Charlotte Wins. Well, in this case, I'm going to hand it over to Roman because LOL, Roman wins. Doesn't matter who you think should win, LOL, Roman wins. I'm going with Roman Reigns over Drew McIntyre.
Drew is the one. I know who Drew McIntyre is, people. Calm the fuck down. that's the whole Shane McMahon storyline, correct?
Right.
Okay. Drew should win, and Drew will win. I just, after what happened, it's the greatest Super Royal Rumble show ever this past week in Saudi Arabia. Shane got the win over Roman, correct?
Right.
Okay, yeah. They're going to keep that going, man. Unless I'm missing something, I think Shane is going to interfere somehow, and they're going to keep this whole thing going. And the only way to keep it going is to have Drew win. Roman's beaten Drew already. I don't see them ending this, but I just – the only way to not end it is to have Drew win. So I'm going Drew should and Drew will.
All right. Well, let's turn it over to the ladies now. SmackDown Women's Champion Bayley is taking on Alexa Bliss. Big Rick, who you got?
I'm Alexa Bliss, Mark. I will always say she should win everything. But they got to keep it on Bayley, man. Bayley, I think Bayley's going to keep it here.
You think so?
I do. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. I think that Bayley just won that title, cashing in. We're not gonna take it off of her anytime soon. I think she should win too. I think that kind of much like what I said about Samoa Joe. If you want to see what you really got with Bayley, you got to let her ride the bike and run with the flag for a little bit. And so I think that you do that. Bayley should win, and I think she does. And I think Alexa Bliss is a good person for her to meet to help legitimize her run.
Are you missing Ronda Rousey? And then
no.
You don't, but do you think the women's division is missing? Not so much Ronda Rousey, but Ronda Rousey. Let's just fucking put it out there. Because ever since she's left, I mean, say what you want to say, right. You know, opinions are opinions, but the women's division has taken a hit.
Yeah, I think that you,
Ronda has left.
Yeah, there's no denying that Ronda Rousey is a personality and a star all unto herself that elevated that division in a way that no other woman on the roster can, simply by the fact that she is a known athlete outside of the world of wrestling. To me, it was undeniable that she had that she had charisma that fans were drawn to. That when they let her really kind of towards the end of her run there, heal it up a little bit more, as opposed to being, gosh, I'm happy to be here, sort of wrestler. That made a big difference, and I think that there is a void there, and I think that, you know, kind of the biggest persona they have right now is Charlotte.
Right.
For as much as people might want to hate on that, myself included, like, I love Charlotte as a wrestler. I think she's been a women's champion too many times already in her young career. But at some point, like, who you got? And you look at who can be the standard bearers. Fans have started to turn on some folks. Fans are really big into Becky Lynch. They have turned on Becky Lynch in some circles. I don't think that she's nearly as a dismal failure as some would have it made. But she hasn't felt like she's had the same kind of energy.
Right.
Alexa Bliss is probably one of those great personalities out there, and you can see why they bring her out there, because she's over and big with fans. They love it. They dig it. But once you get there, you got to start building some folks up, and none of these people are people that I feel can capture the imagination to the level of a Ronda Rousey. I do think that there's a lot of talent there that can make this division very compelling and interesting without Ronda there. And that's why I say I don't necessarily miss her very much, because I am entertained by some of the directions that we have, including the next match that we're going to talk about, which is the Raw Women's Champion, Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans. I love Lacey Evans. I've loved her since they started really pushing the angle that they're doing with her. I've loved her since I saw that they were going to make her a big deal when she debuted at the Women's Royal Rumble and went 26 some minutes as the number two entrant.
Right.
That tells you what the WWE sees in her. She is a rising star. I would love to see them flip the belt on Lacey Evans for, you know, at Stomping Grounds and defeat Becky Lynch. I just don't think they're going to do it yet. I think that they invested so much in Becky Lynch. I just don't see them flipping the belt this time around. And I'm also one of those people who doesn't believe that Lacey gets killed if she loses here.
But you don't think she's going to get lost in the shuffle?
No, I don't think she's going to get lost in the shuffle, because I think they value her in a way that's different than, say, a Carmella. I think that they value her, and that's a lot.
Coming from you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think she's going to disappear. I do think she's the heir apparent in the Raw Women's Division. I just don't know that they've got this thing going on with Becky and Beth Phoenix. They don't need a belt for Beth Phoenix and Becky to really have a feud or a fight. But it sure does add a little something if Beth Phoenix is coming back for one more run to come over Becky Lynch, who's been running her down on Twitter all over the place.
Yeah.
I think Lacey Evans is going to be there. I don't think she's going away. I think that she has got a gimmick that works. I think people buy into it. And I think that, she'll take this L and it'll be okay.
Yeah. I think this one ends in a screwy finish. I don't think Lacey gets pinned. I don't think Becky gets pinned. One of those things where you kind of protect the talent, and I know that's not popular these days with all the 50-50 booking, but for some reason in this case, I don't see either one of these ladies getting pinned or tapping out, but I do think Becky retains.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Lacey Evans fan. I absolutely love her character. I love what she's doing, but I think this one continues. I think, like I said, double DQ, count out, disqualification somehow. And it just this angle keeps going forward.
Yeah, get us to SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah, and what I like about these two, what caught my eye, it was actually a fan's video in the crowd. I think the first time these two hooked up, the physicality they had, I mean, they were hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I can list on one hand how many girls, how many ladies in the women's division doesn't look green or doesn't look so choreographed to the point where I'm no longer disinterested 10 seconds into the match.
Right.
And these two are two of them. They're tough. They'll hit you. And it doesn't look choreographed. It doesn't look like, all right, we're going to go super slow here because I have to get this spot. It's just they fucking get in there and they go. And that's right. That's what I like about them.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I found really interesting is, you know, I was talking about prevailing internet opinions. I don't think we're going to have time to get to it, but one of the columns that I came across on Cage Side Seats is somebody being like,
not a sponsor.
What was it? No. What's that?
Not a sponsor.
Yeah, we always call out crappy websites. This guy's Sean Reuter, and I don't care if I pronounce your name wrong, Sean. You wrote a terrible article.
Nice.
Titled this column of his, WWE shows no signs of backing off this Lacey Evans push, and then leads with, critical consensus seems to be that Lacey Evans isn't ready for the spotlight WWE's given her the past couple of months. And it's just like this dude leads with his opinion, says that it's consensus and wants you to buy that she's not ready. And it's like you're not watching the product. I don't know what you're watching.
Lacey has come in this gimmick,
right,
and convinced me that she's top four over the 30 women that are in the division. I don't know. What does he mean she's not ready? What is it that he thinks she's not doing to not be ready?
He doesn't really say. Like, that's the thing that's great.
If you're going to say she's not ready, you have to tell us why.
I'll continue. The 29-year-old has a compelling backstory, a great look, and all the tools needed to succeed in pro wrestling. But her brief time in the NXT mid-card may not have prepared her to play the heel in the top women's program on Raw. But if the lady seems to be floundering to you and me, it apparently doesn't look that way to Vince McMahon and the WWE brass. So he's laid out in the first two paragraphs of this article, he has laid out that Lacey has a compelling backstory. She has a great look. All the tools needed to succeed in pro wrestling. But he doesn't lay out anything.
Because she didn't have a long run at NXT.
Right.
She's not ready.
Because she was a mid-card at NXT. And that article gets published. And then is like, well, they're dead set on going with it. I guess they're stuck. So the only bit of information that this guy has that she's floundering is his perceived role of where she should be in his mind versus what he even writes that he's seeing as legitimate.
Read that last part again about the backstage and Vince McMahon.
Oh, but if the lady seems to be floundering to you and me, it apparently doesn't look that way to Vince McMahon and the press. So he doesn't know.
So this guy is So this guy either works there or he's fucking reading Dave Meltzer more bullshit. It's like, how the fuck do you how could you possibly publish that last part? It's strictly subjective and he's presenting it as fact.
Exactly. And this is usually the sort of thing that we would then go through and dissect on the internet bullshit wrestling report of the week. And it really just is very much like when you put out, like, I don't understand how you can be like, this person's really good at this. They do this. They're extremely talented. They're wonderful, but they're not ready. All the tools to succeed in professional wrestling.
Except she had a mid-card run at NXT, so that's going to hinder her.
So she's not ready for where she is on Raw. Anyway, so we'll move on. We got two matches to go.
How dare he disparage the good goddamn name of Lacey Evans?
Well, how dare he pretend like he knows anything about professional wrestling?
Big Dave is in love with Cage Side Seats, man. He is going to just shit a brick.
Well, Sean Reuter's there It's probably Dave's number one fan. Anyway, I'm going to go follow Sean on Twitter. That's what I'm going to do.
Make sure he follows you back or you unfollow him.
All right. Yeah, I'm on it.
429. 429.
Hold steady. All right. So we got our two WWE championship matches. I'm gonna be honest. I'm really torn about one of these. I'm not torn about the other.
Really?
Yep. WWE champion Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler in a steel cage. These two have been feuding for a few months now. Rick, what do you think?
Kofi, I guess, should and will. This whole thing is just, I don't know. When I'm watching a show, it could be an HBO, a Showtime, an ABC. If I don't have logic to if the show doesn't give me logic as to why this guy's getting killed, or why he deserves a promotion, or why he deserves to stay with his wife, I'm going to say this is dumb. I'm turning the channel, and that's what I do. Ziggler lost 1, 2, 3 in the ring, and you're getting because he went in the back and demanded a rematch in a steel cage. We're going to give him one.
Right.
I don't know. I'm a WWE apologist. I will defend them to the death, but I don't know. This I have no interest in. This is what Dolph's 90th time at getting a run, and it's failed. So I mean, Kofi's going to keep it. Should and will. Kofi.
I agree. This is, and of the two, this is the one I'm not torn about. I think that the sole purpose of this whole feud is kind of like what we talked about down below with Bayley. And that's, you know, really trying to get Kofi some legitimate victories over hands that we know what the result is going to be, but they can put on a good match.
Right.
I like the Dolph Ziggler attitude of it should have been me. I don't like the argument that he's somehow been passed over. It was and if you're a follower of the show from the days when Ziggler started, Greg and I were huge, thought Ziggler was going to be the next big thing, and was, you know, it was just going to be all over the place, and he hasn't been.
Right.
He's never been that guy.
I think a lot of people felt that.
Right.
As well.
And I think that I'm with you at this point, right? That we've gotten to a point where I just don't buy it. I just don't buy him as the champ. I don't buy him as the person to unseat Kofi. And I'm actually really pleased with the way Kofi's been booked since winning the title. I think it's been about keeping his feel-good story going. And he's gonna keep that going against Dolph Ziggler. I think he's going to win. I think that he should win. And there you go. Kofi Kingston should and will.
And I got some heat on Twitter, man. I looked on Facebook in these wrestling groups, and people, this was about a month ago, maybe not even, just bitching and complaining about Kofi's run. Is it over? I'm bored with it already. And I go on Twitter, and I put pre-WrestleMania, oh, we want Kofi. Post-WrestleMania, we're tired of him. And, dude, the backlash I got because everybody was like, oh, fuck that. I love Kofi's run. And I'm like, this is not what I'm reading. And it torn me. It's like Twitter and Facebook, dude, have two totally different opinions. I'm shocked because I went and I said, you know, let me look. And I'm looking on Twitter, can't find nothing. Going on these wrestling pages on Facebook, it's all over the place. So,
yeah.
I don't know. But I know one more match, but your thoughts on Kofi. Who do you see? Is the person that's going to take this title off him, are they even in the mix right now? Or do you think WWE even has an idea of what they're doing?
I don't know. I think that they have an idea. I don't know that we've seen the roadmap yet. I think that I would not be surprised if this is a fairly lengthy title run for Kofi Kingston.
SummerSlam? And I'm okay. Survivor Series?
I could see him getting past SummerSlam.
Okay.
I could see Survivor Series being where we really look to see his run being threatened. And that's a big deal. Like, if that happens, I think that's a huge deal.
Right.
That's a hell of a run. Kofi Kingston. I think a lot of people are like you and would love to see a New Day turn of some sort, whether it's Big E, whether it's a triple threat match for that belt at some point between the three of them, like some sort of wedge. I don't know. But my goodness, I think that there's a real potential there. And I do think Big E would be a lot of fun. Big E's such a talented guy that is another one of those guys that a lot of people have seen something in, but he's never really been given a chance to take the ball and really go and run with it. But I think that would be a hell of a feud. So that's a possibility. Other than that, I don't know. I don't think we may or may not have necessarily seen the one who's going to take the belt off of him. We'll just have to wait and see.
That'll work.
All right. So final match on the card right now, according to friends at WWE.com, for the Universal Championship. Seth Rollins is taking on Baron Corbin, and Baron Corbin has been told he could choose the guest referee for this match. So I got a little addendum because I don't know, have they announced a referee yet?
I'm hitting refresh on Wikipedia. There is another match that's announced.
Oh.
A triple threat for the cruiserweight.
Oh, saw the pre-show.
Yes. But the one thing that hasn't been refreshed is that it's still to be determined on the referee.
All right, so let's hold on the Universal Championship because nobody watches the cruiserweights anyway. It's a running joke. I don't watch 205 Live, and I catch all for it every week.
What is that?
I hear it's a show. Like this, it's like NXT. Like I hear it exists. I've never watched a minute of it. I know I'm a terrible wrestling fan. WWE Cruiserweight Champion Tony Nese versus Akira Tozawa and Drew Gulak.
Yep.
In a triple threat match. That is also popped up on WWE.com. So that must have happened on 205 Live after SmackDown went off the air. I'm just going to throw this out here really quick. I think Akira Tozawa should win because why not? But Tony Nese will win because they keep the championship on him until he loses to Kushida.
Any man that can beat the man that was knocking Alexa Bliss is a god to me. So Tony Nese.
All right. So back up to the chop, to the match people I actually care about. The Universal Champion Seth Rollins versus Baron Corbin. Two parts of this, Rick. Who will be the guest referee? And then who should win and who will win?
I have no idea who's going to be the special guest referee. I have no idea where they're going to come with this angle. And until Baron Corbin can find suitable ring gear, he will never, ever should win anything in my book. Seth Rollins should and will. This is, of course, before they announce the special guest referee and or Baron Corbin finds new ring gear.
So I'm gonna throw this out here. I don't remember who put this out on social media. I don't remember. And so I'm ripping this off, but I think this is a hell of an idea. So whoever put this out there in social media, thank you. I'm stealing it. I'm going to own I'm stealing it. If I can find it later, I'll give you credit on Twitter, and then I'll follow you if you follow me back, because according to Rick, that has to happen.
Yes.
Charlotte Flair is your special guest referee.
Okay, stop.
Was that you?
No. Hell no.
Oh, okay.
Who? So why? Why?
Hear me out. Okay. Here was the theory. So the WWE has really been pushing hard since it became announced and official that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch are a couple.
Okay.
And have been together. And that they are in super love with each other. And so what better way for Becky Lynch, or for Charlotte Flair to get one over on Becky Lynch when she can't wrestle her, than to put one over on her boyfriend by being the special guest referee that Baron Corbin chooses to help defeat Seth Rollins and win the Universal Championship?
Okay, a few things. It makes too much sense. So WWE going down that path. I can see fucking Hurricane Helms or some shit coming in, to continue an angle, absolutely, for sure.
I love it.
So you're saying that's your pick, or is that
I'm gonna run with that pick. I love it.
Interesting.
And I don't even care if it's wrong. Charlotte Flair, and then somebody else. And the other point that this person made, again, whoever it was, thank you. It's like Seth Rollins been played off as the stand-up boyfriend, stand-up guy, won't hit a lady, not going to hit Charlotte Flair with a chair. So he's gonna do the face thing, be right by things. And this is why I'm conflicted, because if you'd asked me a year ago if I thought Baron Corbin could be a champion in the WWE, my answer would have been no.
Before he endorsed the Baron Corbin Suck shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot.
Baron Corbin Sucks was a segment on this show.
Baron Corbin Sucks.
You remember that segment. I still think Baron Corbin sucks. I hate him.
As you he's should. Over.
And here's the thing, but he's over. He really is. He's over as a heel.
One of the very few true heels we have in wrestling today.
And it is real heat. And heat in a good way, not in a go away way.
Right.
I could see them doing it. That being said, I am going to say, against my better judgment, Seth Rollins is gonna retain. But I think the time is ripe for Baron Corbin to pull an upset. And if he wins on Sunday, I will not be shocked. I'm gonna predict Seth Rollins.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm asking because I don't know. I'm asking to see if you know. Besides WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Rumble, Survivor Series, when was the last time that the championship has changed hands? Can you recall?
I can't recall, but I know it's happened. That's not that unusual.
Guys, this is spitballing off the top of my head from memory. I'm almost 100% positive I'm wrong, but it seems that they don't do impromptu title changes anymore.
They definitely don't do a lot of titles changing hands. And I'm trying to, like, they've changed their website around. I'm trying to get to where I can find the champions, see if I can find the champion, like, because you can usually find the history of the belt, like who we want it from and that sort of deal. But they usually save up a big title change for WrestleMania. Like that's always been a thing.
Here we go. Let's see here.
Yeah, it was like,
okay, Money in the Bank. Let's go back to since 2016, Rumble, Mania, Money in the Bank, Backlash, Rumble, Elimination Chamber, Mania, Backlash, SmackDown, Mania. So yeah, it does happen.
Right.
Okay.
We
need another one. We need another one on Sunday.
But wouldn't that be amazing? Seriously, that would give reasoning.
It would back up. It would give. It's a good reason to switch the title, because not only are you continuing the Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins, but now you're entering Charlotte that has a problem with Becky, and then Andrade is going to be coming in at some point. So now you have a mixture. Now you can do all kind of things. But again, Patrick, I give you props for that. I just don't think WWE is that smart.
Right.
And I don't say that trying to be funny. I really don't.
Sure. And again, full disclosure, stole this from somebody else off the internet. Wish I could find who it was. But really, like, I want to know. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready to see something like this happen. I really would love, like I said, if you would have told me a year ago that I would love the idea of Baron Corbin as Universal Champion, I would have laughed you out of the building. And yet, here I am, being like, if this happens, I wouldn't be surprised. That being said, totally picking Seth Rollins. So there you have it. Those are our picks for the WWE Stomping Grounds, by the way. It's plural.
Stomping Grounds. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, why? I don't know why we needed the S, but it's there.
How much time do you have left, Patrick?
I can do a little bit longer.
Okay. I know you wanted to talk about did you want to talk about John before we finish?
I did.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something real quick. Let's finish with that. Do you think, and I understand the way WWE's business is laid out, it's never going to happen. But do you, like, and I wanted to say this earlier when you were talking about Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins, but I wanted to wait till now. With having everybody wrestle everybody every week, is that not hurting? Like, is that not hurting pay-per-views? And I say that because you saw Bret Hart wrestle on TV twice, I think, I want to say in 97, is what they said, is what Bruce said, on television. Right. You saved your top talent for pay-per-view, and if you did wrestle, it wasn't against somebody that could main event a WrestleMania. You're seeing all these great matches on television, so when pay-per-views come, it's watered down. It's something we've seen before, and we know nothing's going to come of it. A, do you think they need to go back to not having everybody on TV every week? And B, we know it won't happen, but it's too many pay-per-views here?
I absolutely think there are too many pay-per-views. I think there are too many pay-per-views and there are too many specials. I mean, if you look at, since WrestleMania, what's gone down, like, you had WrestleMania, you've had Money in the Bank, which I attended and was, like, a great time. You had the show in Saudi Arabia. You've got Stomping Grounds coming up. I blame kind of the difference in programming and what we used to have on the Monday Night Wars of the 90s. Because prior to the Monday Night Wars, wrestling was very different than what there is, very, very much like what you're describing, or what Bruce was describing, where you didn't have this dedicated 3 to 6 hours of programming that you had to keep up with, and that you had to keep eyes turned on to, in order to kind of keep those ratings, which did matter back in the 90s, in a way that I think they matter less now. But there was such a glut of and a need for programming that they really started trying to find ways to make it compelling television for people to turn in and watch. And you could no longer do matches with guys where you knew the outcome was a foregone conclusion for the most part. And so we started to lose that idea of the enhancement talent. And so you might see Bret Hart wrestle, but Bret Hart might be wrestling Iron Mike Sharp, for example.
Right.
And Iron Mark Sharp was an enhancement talent. You knew that Bret Hart was going to beat Mike Sharp. You knew the match wasn't going to take very long. Same thing with Dwayne Gill, and Barry Horowitz, even though Barry Horowitz got a little bit of a push. If you go back and watch those wrestling programs I was talking about earlier in the day, that's what the show was. It's basically the same hour over and over and over again every week. Top guy wrestling unknown top guy wins, and all about building the top guy to the big pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And in those days, it was the house show circuit. So, those shows, those hour long shows, they'd cut promos. And then about halfway through the show, they'd be doing an interview about all the local stops that, Mid-Atlantic was going to be hitting, and they'd have a wrestler coming and be like, I'm going to be in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I'm going to show everybody this, this, and this. Now I'm going to defend my title here in Charlotte, and I'm going to do blah, 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 blah. And they'd hype up those shows, so that you had to actually go and pay to see those guys. Well, when Monday Night Raw and particularly Nitro came about, they started to change the landscape. They started to change things from where it was Dwayne Gill facing off against Bret Hart. And now suddenly Bret Hart's got to face a guy like a Chris Benoit.
Yep.
And actually, if you want to see it, even if you want to pick out a particular moment for me personally where I saw it all change, it's definitely the Monday Night Show where Scott Hall shows up. That's the last time that Mike Enos shows up to wrestle somebody, really. And Mike Enos was an enhancement talent at the time. And so they would, I think Mike Enos might have actually been the over guy at that point. Like, he was the bigger name of the two. But that stuff started ending, and you started to see matches where you knew who both guys were. you still probably had a pretty good idea. Like when the Disco Inferno came out in a Nitro match early on in his career, you knew Disco was going to lose to Glacier, for example, just to give you a crappy undercard match. But you were always promised these main event level matches. You were always promised this talent that was kind of on the whole was equal. I think the other thing that's really hurt wrestling these days is this concept of even Stevens booking that we see a lot, where nobody really gets a dominant run for a significant period of time. And so you really don't build a lot of people up as legitimate contenders of anything, unless your name is Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins. But, you know, perfect example of this, of a guy who just doesn't – he for every win, he gets a crushing loss, Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
You know, and right now he's in a really exciting program that I'm cautiously optimistic about. But if they continue to do with him what they've done, you know, and I said at the top of the show, and people are going to be like, at the top of the show, you said wins don't matter. They don't until they do. And for the right guy, they really do. And for someone like Bray Wyatt, who you're trying to push as this threat to everything, he's got to win a little bit, if not a lot, so that you can establish that this big bad is going to take something special to take him down. And they don't do that anymore. The Wyatt family was this unique, wonderful-looking thing, and they crushed it. Rusev was this great old-school-looking foreign heel.
He could have been if they would have stayed the course with Rusev, he could have been in the conversation of greatest heels ever.
Right. Crushed by John Cena. Has never really gotten it back.
Never.
Hey, Samoa Joe. Same sort of deal.
2015, I was at the Fastlane. This is the one where Sting came face-to-face with Triple H in Memphis. Right. Me and Matt Rabb took a drive. I was living in Nashville at the time.
Yep.
And when he came out, dude, I've been to hundreds of wrestling events. That is top three heat on somebody that I have ever seen in my life.
Right.
The amount of heat that it was amazing, and I loved it, and I went along with it. But WWE just fucking crushed that momentum. I don't know what they were thinking.
And it wasn't even necessarily anything that made him look like a goof. They just didn't have him win in a dominant. Like, he won dominantly for a while, and then went away. And you could even see it going further back. There's a lot of these guys that come out as big, intimidating, scary sort of dudes. And I'm going to throw out some names and people. I want you to settle down. I'm not saying that these would have been Hall of Famers, but there were big, intimidating dudes that could come out, had a very unique sort of appearance of Snitsky. That's an example. Snitsky, big, huge guy, you know, just could look intimidating, look like he crushing, lost to everybody as much as he beat everybody. And so you take that away and it diminishes them. And then suddenly when Eric Bischoff is trying to, you know, scare a face by saying, you're going to have to take on something challenging, and he says Snitsky, and nobody goes, ooh, it's because you've killed that momentum and that heat. And so I think that that's a real problem. I think that makes wrestling a little less.
Well, then let me throw it in today's terms. Do you think that, I don't want to say a must win, but do you think that if Baron Corbin loses clean to Seth Rollins, let's not go as far as saying that's going to happen to Baron, but you have to think it's going to take a hit. All the momentum Baron has, if it's a clean finish, it's got to kill the momentum.
I think if he gets beat clean 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring, not as a result of his shenanigans backfiring, because that's, you know, that I think is a good way to keep his heat. That does hurt. And I think that Baron Corbin is one of those people who I don't think he's quite to where losing doesn't matter. I'm just going back to the card, which I got rid of. There's certain folks that I think that you see have grown to be immune. I think Finn Balor is one of those people that losing doesn't matter for Finn Balor.
Right.
Like, Finn can lose. He's always going to be a big deal. I think that, you know, bigger names, obviously establishing names like a Randy Orton. Randy Orton can lose 10 times out of 10 next 10 pay-per-views. Doesn't matter. It's going to be fine. But when you look at these guys that you're trying to rebuild, like if they were to, if Kofi Kingston, I think a loss matters in a big way for Kofi when he loses the title. If he doesn't get a good solid run, if he doesn't get a good long run, Seth Rollins, I think if Seth loses, it doesn't matter.
No, he's in that category where it's made. Win or lose, he's a made man. You're in there.
Right. I think that Drew McIntyre losses matter. Yes. And I think you could do. I think you could do a whole show on people who wins matter and losses matter, and for people who wins and losses don't matter. Oddly enough, R-Truth can lose any day of the week. Doesn't matter.
Hell, he's a 6-time 24/7 champ already.
He's just gonna keep on bouncing back, and he's gonna win that title back from Drake Maverick or whoever, and it's gonna be fun. It's a different sort of reason why losses don't matter for him. But it's still there. And it's these guys in the middle that that really kind of struggle with it. There's some guys in the middle who make their gravy off of it and do fine. The Miz is a good example. Like, I think The Miz can lose and it doesn't really matter because his persona and his charisma is so strong as a character that a loss does not cripple him as a performer. I just keep looking forward to his next, you know, world title reign. But I think Samoa Joe, losses matter.
Do they really, though, at this point? I mean, do we – we don't expect Vince to give that man a run.
No, but I think that if you want to continue to have him be some sort of powerhouse and view him as a powerhouse, then, yeah, you definitely should expect him to still win every once in a while. And win consistently, I guess, is the way I'm trying to describe it. But, you know, I'm just kind of looking.
We could go on a whole show about the whole Mysterio thing.
Right. Right. Well, and Mysterio's different. At least you can argue that Mysterio's a Hall of Famer. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
true.
Like, his, you know, Rey Mysterio's a legend. He's always been known as an underdog guy. Like, again, beat Randy Orton. Beat, you know, WrestleMania. Right. So that's not really outside the realm of possibility. But other guys who losses don't matter. AJ Styles can lose any of the day of the week. Doesn't matter. But I think like an Aleister Black, I think there's a lot hinging on what happens with Aleister Black over the next few months. I think Andrade, a lot matters with what happens with him over the next few months. And so, you know, is Andrade going to be, you know, the next made man? Or is Andrade going to be the next guy that we're sitting there wistfully being like, man, he went the same way as Dolph Ziggler.
Yep.
So yeah, I think there's a lot there. I think that there's, you know, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. But no, I think that wins and losses, like I said, they don't matter until they do. That's a call of all on himself. And I expect Greg DeMarco to write it because I won't.
Well, let's talk about what everyone else is talking about, man.
Let's do it.
Show John Moxley, aka Dean Ambrose, aka his real name, whatever it is. It's not John Moxley. I don't know. I forgot what it was, but puts out a couple podcasts with Jericho. Wade Keller podcast was better, in my opinion, but both of them are very entertaining, very informative. He goes out, wins the IWGP. That's correct, right? The IWGP.
Yep. IWGP
United States title. He is not in the G1. News came out they are not going to let him in the G1 tournament, AEW that is. But he's doing independent shows all across the country. And when TV starts, you can bet your ass there is no more bookings. He is going to be 100% with AEW for obvious reasons. But, man, let's talk about it. We knew it was coming. Greg thought he was coming back in the Rumble. He had a very good theory. Greg is a son of a bitch because he lays things out to where I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Yeah, that's going to happen. So I start going, say, hey, this is going to happen. And when it doesn't, I'm like, God damn you, Greg. But
see, that's a rookie mistake. I mean, he said CM Punk would be back within 5 years of his departure. And we all know how that worked out.
He will be back this Monday.
Oh, stop it. Oh, stop it. This Monday.
But stop it. Double or Nothing, which I thought was a great. I gave it an A. Plus, it was a great pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Makes his AEW debut. He's taking on Kenny Omega at All Out August 31st. Big hype around him, man. Why right, so I'm assuming the answer is WWE booking. But how is it that he is this big, this fast, outside of the WWE world? But in WWE, he's just Dean Ambrose.
Did
he have the support that he has now, but it's just now that he has that creative freedom? That freedom to do independence?
I think it's a couple of different things. One, I do think that the way the WWE saw John versus the way that he wanted to work, and this has always been the thing, is I think that John Moxley had his own vision of what he believes wrestling booking and storytelling is. The WWE had a different vision.
And I'm going to cut you off. Just paraphrase that tweet you sent out, which was arguably tweet of the month, about how you listen to the podcast with Jericho, and when it's all said and done, it came down to simply this.
Yeah, it was John Moxley's expectations of booking were different than what the WWE's expectations were. He wasn't happy, so he left.
And what job? Tell me a person. 99% of the people are not going to agree with what their superior at work does.
Right.
It's just like, life. It's what happens.
Right. And it was one of those things, like, he showed the class to let his contract run out.
Yes, he did.
And leave. And I'm totally fine with that.
That's what you should do,
Patrick. Right, exactly. And in regards to your question about his level of being over, I think that what's very important to remember, and this is actually, I'm going to see if I can bring this conversation back. I think that the reason it seems like he's so huge right now is because the fans that he is connecting with is a smaller subset of a base that didn't exist within the WWE. And I think what's really important for people to pay attention to with AEW is not so much what we're seeing now, because AEW right now is developing a show with these pay-per-views that caters to a very strong subset of fans that really believe in what they're wanting to put out there and do. It is not this broad swath of millions of fans that the WWE reaches out to, that quote unquote WWE universe. And so crowing about the WWE's inability to sell out Stomping Grounds, which is a pay-per-view that is new, made up, is in the middle of not their busy season, and is one of the 14 that happened at the WWE do versus, you know, Double or Nothing, All Out. What's that other one that they're doing? Like
Fighter Fest. And,
Fighter Fest.
God, I can't think of the one in September or July.
But we're looking at smaller shows that are very targeted. They're very much supposed to speak to a disgruntled, disappointed fan base in the WWE. They are.
No, I agree. 100%. Yeah.
And it's that fan that you were talking about before that doesn't like anything that the WWE does. Well, AEW is your solution. What I'm interested to see is when TV starts to happen and you've got to change and you've got to continue to build that audience. You got to be able to build from this. You got to start to bring in new folks. Where are those new folks going to come from, and how are you going to build it? Because right now, that core, they're going to go to everything you do. And so these venues, that's why I'm not sold on this idea that they would sell out a stadium show. Because I don't know.
I posted that poll, and it came back, had 190-something votes. I want to say it was 82 or 83% said yes. But then I put that poll out before the number of people that attempted. Now, I'm sure some of these were repeats, but the fact that they had 162,000 attempts to get tickets, an AEW apologist is going to say, ho-ho, you could sell out two stadiums, when in reality, it's a third of those were probably the same people that were getting booted out and coming back. But, yeah, it is overwhelming. The response that they're getting, but I'm with you. If I had to vote, I can't vote. You can't vote on your poll. But if I were to vote, I would have said no as well.
Yeah, I don't know what's real there. I think that I think that it's possible that AEW can do it. I just don't know that it's there yet. So I think that these people, you know, we had Dean Ambrose leaves. We've known forever that he was heading out, that John Moxley was leaving, except for Greg. It finally happens. People wanted to see what he was going to do there. You know, even though it was quiet, there was some thought that maybe he was going to show up at All Out or Double or Nothing. He did. It was a huge deal. He did these podcasts. So he's really doing a great job of striking while the iron is hot.
Absolutely.
And really branding himself pretty well. Now, I think that $100 for a photo and an autograph is a little nuts at your merch table, John. But you know what? People are probably going to pay for it. More power to them. And good on you for being able to capitalize on that.
I shared that too, man. And I said, would you pay it? And you wouldn't believe the responses I got. Everybody's like, yeah, I'll pay it. I'll pay it. I'm like, well, it must be nice to have $100 just to spend on a picture. And to me, that's a tank of fuel and dinner for the family.
Well, that's the thing. I get texts from the wife being like, don't use the debit card today because we only got $50. I'm like, so sorry, John. I can't do that. Paycheck to paycheck, bro.
Yeah.
Not all the time. That's, you know, I'm just always poor. Anyway.
Kayfabe.
So you look at what this audience has right now, and right now AEW is the new thing. It's the exciting thing. It's putting on good shows. I agree that the shows have been great. I want to see what they do next. Now, as far as this story goes, here's what I love about this story is the shock that people have in regards to AEW behaving like a mainstream wrestling company. With right now, as much as you may think that they're, you know, that you look at a partnership, isn't going to let somebody perform on a pay-per-view in the United States for another major company because that's their guy.
I've
been this reaction, whether it's people being mad at AEW for not letting him perform or thinking that New Japan is a bunch of idiots because they didn't figure out that this was going to happen, that, you know, all talking about all these burned bridges and stuff. At the end of the day, to me, it's AEW's business. Like, this is this guy that they're going to, that they got under contract, that they announced is under contract, that has gone on record as saying he's going to work for them in the United States. And that's the thing to be clear here, is he's only not going to be at the opening day G1 Climax 29 media event in Dallas, Texas. The G1 Climax goes much longer than just the opening day event. Like, there will be events in Japan, and if he's available, and his contract with AEW, which is the priority contract, everybody.
Right. Yep.
If it allows him, he can go perform in Japan, and they're okay with that. So.
And I'm going to say, I don't know if this has been reported, but you can bet your ass, once television starts, there is no more going to Japan. That's it.
I don't think so either. I think that you're right. I think that they're going to want to lock him down.
Which, Tony Khan was on the Steve Austin podcast, which returned Tuesday, by the way, after a 7-month hiatus. But he did say it will be a 2-hour program every week.
Right.
He didn't release the date, but, I mean, look, I'm all for AEW, man. But, you know, now putting on one event is one thing. Creating television 2 hours a week and continuing storylines week after week after week is a whole different ball game. And I understand Cody Rhodes and the Bucks, and look, you've been there. No, you haven't been there. You haven't done that. You have not created television with ongoing storylines for week after weeks after weeks. Expect, you and me, we're rational. We're going to look at something and say, okay, that was not good. They're just started out. They need to fix this. Because they're going to be learning as they're going. But you can bet your AEW apologists, oh, this week was the best week of wrestling AEW ever had. The fact is, it's not going to be great every week off top. Because it's new to them. You're writing television for 2 hours every week. It's not going to be as easy as people think it's going to be. It's not going to be as good as people think it's going to be in the beginning. It will get better. So,
I will say one of the things that they've got working for them in their corner, that I'm assuming will be a big part of TV and storytelling. And Booker is somebody who I think is very logical. I think Jim Ross is a good asset to have in that company. I think that for as much as people kind of smile on, Billy Gunn is a good person to have in that company.
And they have a director, a producer in the back, and I can't remember this guy's name.
Right.
But everybody has said this is the guy you want in your corner. And he left WWE about a year ago.
Right.
But he worked for Vince for like 15 or 20 years. And dude, they have it backstage. You're right. They have what it takes. And it's just going to take them a little time to find their niche. But when they do.
And I think I think it'll be interesting to see, as we learn more details, who the booking team and who the creative team is going to be. I think that Cody, of the four of Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks, I think that Cody, given his background, given who his father was, as his father was a hell of a booker, Dusty finishes notwithstanding. I think Cody has the right mind. I think that Cody is clearly driven to see this through and to see it work in a positive way, and I want it to succeed. There's folks, I'm sure it's the same people that think that the WWE needs to go out of business.
Jeez.
But for me, it really is like, I want to see them build something sustainable. And I hope that they listen to, of all people, Eric Bischoff. And one of the things, if you listen to 83 Weeks, that you'll hear him talk a lot about when booking. And he talks a lot about it in regards to Vince Russo and kind of running Vince Russo down. But he says, if you have an idea, great. Where does it end? What is the goal? Where is it going? And those are the things that are really important, is that, you know, have a plan, know where you're going. And they've got some time to figure that stuff out to start. And thanks to you, Rick, I'm picking up followers. So awesome.
Fantastic. Where are we at, POD?
I think I'm now up to 432. Picked up three.
Son of a bitch. 432.
There you go. But I do think that this is where the rubber's going to hit the road, is the first 6 months of television. And I've long said that, talk to me in 3 years about where AEW is. Because if in 3 years, I think, is when you really know. Because it'll either be dead or it'll be going strong and fine. And we really will be looking at a true alternative to the WWE.
Is there anything else you want to touch on, man?
No, man. I think this is a great show. Happy to end this at 11:09, which is about 10 minutes after we start the program on normal nights. So excited to get to bed at a decent East Coast hour and show up
West
for work,
Coast not jumps.
And not be a zombie for the first hour of work tomorrow morning. Looking forward to it. So thanks for filling in for Greg. Really enjoyed it. And look forward to the next time, man.
Absolutely, man. Again, on Twitter, you can find me at TheBigRig62. Find Patrick at WrestlingRealist, WrestlingRealng, Realist on the Twitter. Patrick, is there anything else you want to say, man, before we get out of here?
No, just have a good night. See you next week, you marks.
All right, brother.
Conrad Thompson from What Happened When Monday with Tony Schiavone and Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard, and you're listening to the Chairshot Radio Network. And visit thechairshot.com. Always use your head.